The Guardian.
Would you like to unlock the secrets of great science writing?
Science writers actually have to find a way of converting very complex ideas into something the rest of the world can understand.
Well, the great science writer Tim Radford can help you do just that. I'll tell you more after the podcast.
Football Weekly. Today, managers. Managers who draw, like Di Matteo and Rodgers at Stamford Bridge. Managers like Sir Alex, who have a little pee to relieve the tension. Plus, managers in the Last Chance Saloon, like Hughes and Adkins. If they can't drown their sorrows with their next round, will they have given their last orders? Plus, don't look at me, I'm not celebrating. Hotels, post and pre-game professions, midweek international friendlies, Armenia-Lithuania, and Ligue 1, the Rome Derby, and so much more in today's Football Weekly. Well, Football Weekly listener, thanks ever so much for joining us for yet another special edition of Football Weekly. Today, Barry Glendening joining us.
Yeah.
And Greg Bukowski.
Hello, James.
Also, Barney Roney.
Hello.
Hi, Barney. I was talking to you about managers I wouldn't want to be employed by, I wouldn't want as a boss, and how Mark Hughes always seems to come out top of my list. And you and I also threw Brendan Rodgers in there, and you were thinking that he would be quite a nice chap to work for.
Well, he seems quite nice. He's a kind of like a nice friendly uncle.
Right. Do you think?
Yeah.
A nice friendly uncle with envelopes.
He's a little bit too friendly, though, at times.
Do you think?
Just when Tony Pulis naked in the dressing room?
Well,
who knows? I mean, they never went that far on that hit sitcom Being Liverpool, did they? But he kind of went really close up to players' faces and patted the cheeks and, you know.
I like it when I see managers patting their players.
Okay. I don't know. So he would be... See, for me... Top of the list would be Mark Hughes. Nothing against the guy, but he just looks really, really miserable. But I don't know who would be top of my... Well,
Tony Pulis would be top of my list. For
not wanting to be employed by.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because you expected to go out and win a fight, aren't
Barney
you?
Barney likes Tony Pulis.
I said exactly the same. I thought Tony Pulis, I'd know where I stood with him. He just wants you to be a man and run through a brick wall. And if you do that, you've done it. That's fine. But I find other managers a bit more confusing. Am I finding space between the lines enough? I'd find it confusing.
I'm with Barney on that.
But Pulis, you know, if you behave like a man, then you've got his respect. That's all he wants.
Yeah.
Gary Megson.
In the good or the bad?
I would not chat. Like... I don't think I'd be that fussy about it. I need someone to keep me on a tight rein and, you know...
Of the current 20, who would be your worst case scenario?
I don't think I'd fancy playing under Big Sam.
Right.
Or any other manager who would make me get in an ice bath.
Oh, right, yeah, well, that's a good shout, actually. Practical question. Very good to bring that one up. Now, I don't know how you feel about...
Does everyone have to go on ice baths now? Probably.
I don't know.
I just think...
They've just been discredited, actually.
Oh, have they?
New science says it's all a massive waste of time.
Well, getting really? In a wheelie bin that 15 people have been in before you, it can't be good for you. It's just filth.
Anyway, this weekend at Stamford Bridge brought one of the more personable young managers, Roberto Di Matteo, against the aforementioned Brendan Rodgers in a game that Chelsea should have won and Liverpool almost did, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea for 65 minutes, they were the better team. Liverpool played well for the first 10 minutes, but I mean, there was the same problems again for Liverpool in that they just haven't got anybody to score a goal other than Suarez. There's nobody else looks very likely to. And they dominate games in, you know, the possession, they're dominating in areas that aren't particularly dangerous. And I think yesterday he maybe got it wrong when he started off with three at the back with wing-backs and only two, you know, the midfield three were outnumbered completely because Chelsea played three just behind the front man and two behind this. So they were just outnumbered. And until Rodgers made the change in the second half, which he did, and he went to 4-2-3-1, which is a formation Liverpool have played for a long time under Dalglish and under Benitez, the game was going in Chelsea's favour, you know. And I think thankfully he did make the change. But
from Liverpool's point of view,
From Liverpool's point of view. But I think if you look at the two sides, I mean, Chelsea have obviously got better personnel, and I think Rodgers bridged the gap tactically by making the change in the second half.
All right, what about the Suarez goal? That shove to buy himself space in the box, the only time he found more room indeed was when he was celebrating it at the corner flag all on his own.
Yeah, we were talking about the shove. Before. I mean, it obviously was a push.
It obviously
but
was.
But just in favour of pushes. He was being marked by Ramirez. Suarez read the flick-on much quicker, so the shove caught Ramirez completely off guard. If he'd been marked by a proper defender, he wouldn't have been able to just push him away like that. I kind of feel teams get away with it a bit sometimes, and Chelsea are definitely trying to be a more sort of ball-playing, attacking team, but you sacrifice something there. You've got players who can be shoved out of the way very easily and perhaps aren't used to defending at corners in the same way.
You're pro-shove?
It's a contact sport. It was a good shove, and Barry? It was a shove that the defender didn't anticipate.
Yeah, it certainly did.
But like, if you look in the Guardian Sports section today, you can see the moment where John Terry is heading in Chelsea's goal, yeah, and there's two other Chelsea players in shot, and they're both being held by defenders. So penalty. Are penalties ever given for that? Very, very rarely.
Well, if Suarez had been marked by a proper defender, you asked Barney Rooney, if John Terry had still been on the field at that point, perhaps he would have been there receiving Suarez's shove, and it would have been a different outcome. Horrible injury. Ooh, horrible injury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, John Terry is quite tough and hard, and he was whimpering like a baby. And Suarez's reaction was obviously, he was quite concerned about him as well, but apparently it's nothing broken, ligament damage probably, but they won't know till later today.
Mm. It looked like the knee kind of, I mean, I wasn't able to follow it very much because I turned away in horror, but it did look like the knee was collapsing in all sorts
of... Yeah, his leg buckled underneath him, didn't he? So.
Right.
Medial ligaments.
Here's Muzika's tweeting in a single half, John Terry manages to score a goal and then get injured. Bitter Chelsea fans wonder why Torres can't do at least one of these. Good goal from John Terry, of course.
Yeah, it was an excellent header.
Completely free header, though, as well. I mean, like, Aga got stuck behind a kind of Ivanovic and someone else sandwich, and Terry ran free. And I mean, it was a good header, but he was in...
Was it deliberate blocking, do you think, from Di Matteo?
Well, possibly. I mean, then that's a, you know...
Sam Di Matteo.
Big Sam Di Matteo. It's not a bad tactic, you know.
You were saying, you know, Liverpool have no one to score apart from Suarez, and Sunderland don't really have anyone to score at all. Although they did get a goal. Why can't more people score? What? It's just getting a goal. It's not that difficult.
Well, okay. I'd say one of the reasons is that the two players who've been playing alongside Suarez are younger and perhaps a bit more keen to prove themselves in other areas of the pitch, i.e. chasing back and doing all the gritty stuff. And Suso was quite a classy player, but I mean, even he wants to prove a point to, you know, the manager, and perhaps aren't being selfish and staying further forward and not working for the team as Rodgers has probably told them to. So therefore, there's only Suarez who kind of stays further forward up the pitch to get on the end of anything. That's one of the reasons I can think. The other one would be that maybe Gerrard should play a little bit further forward himself because he's, you know, the next more likely player to score.
Mm. Well, Liverpool come away with a point from Stamford Bridge. As for Chelsea, we talk about their kind of semi-annual November collapse, and it looks like it could be well underway because Ashley Cole's out, and possibly, according to Mrs. Cole, Ashley's mum, heading to Paris for next season.
Well, why do you say that?
Why do I say his mum?
Yeah, because she posted on Facebook that he's going somewhere that's handy for the Eurostar. And everyone's presuming it's Paris.
Might be Lille.
I suspect it could be Ebbsfleet. Ebbsfleet International Train Station.
Right.
It's so close to Ebbsfleet United's ground that patrons visiting Ebbsfleet are asked to park in their car park.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Good local knowledge.
Maybe he's going to work for The Guardian. We're very handy here. Maybe he's the secret footballer.
Maybe he is.
Yep. But anyway, back to Chelsea. No Ashley Cole. John Terry's going to be out for, well, a bit, obviously. And without him, they've been conceding quite a few goals. So,
Wasn't the problem against Liverpool was that the Torres problem of not being able to score? I mean, they have brilliant attacking play, and it's great, these three guys behind Torres. But, you know, he's got problems
scoring
goals. They all
had decent chances as well. I mean,
but they're not, out and out.
No, goal. I know what you mean, yeah. You know, you Torres need still can't
a really
score.
Deadly striker, they would have won that game.
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought there were times where there was a bit of last-ditch defending from Liverpool, and Brad Jones made some good saves on another day. He would have
Jamie Carragher.
Yeah, Jamie Carragher. Yeah, yeah. He played very well considering he's not being a regular. And you know,
I like Jamie Carragher. He's a player who's been around so long that, however his performance, you can just say Jamie Carragher, and everybody knows what you mean.
Well, everybody's not
amazing. Yeah. He's still playing. I mean, I couldn't. You know, he's like a ghost from the past. What's he doing out there?
Mm. But he's playing quite well.
He's a coach
weekend.
Now, isn't he? He's in the
He's a vibes man. He's a bit like Bez, I think. You know, Stone Rose kind of just gets into the dressing room, dances around a bit.
Happy Monday.
Yeah, you know, when he sits down in the dressing room, it's really bizarre. He crosses his legs quite effeminately, which you wouldn't imagine of Jamie Carragher. Often in a small pair of briefs, going on what I saw him be in Liverpool.
I think if and possibly they will, when Liverpool erect a statue of Jamie Carragher outside Anfield, it'll be that pose where he's waiting for a corner to come in, sort of leaning over with one arm half around his man and the other sort of hanging down by his side, looking very perplexed.
Yeah, possibly, although any artist commission may now be scrapping those plans and deciding and opting in favour of one with him in his briefs with his legs crossed.
I think that'd be a better one, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, nice.
Producer Ben has just pressed the That's Enough Liverpool button. So okay. Let's move on to Manchester teams. Super subs all round, eh? First off, Man City on Sunday going behind against Spurs. Hey, let's start with that goal, shall we? It wasn't Joe Hart's fault. According to All and Sundry, and a lot of people commenting on this, can you, just because you are in the journalism, the print business, is there a pro Joe Hart bigging him up because he's English conspiracy out there?
Well, there certainly was yesterday. It was his fault.
It was the most clear goalkeeping gaffe I've seen in a long time.
Gary Neville gets lauded, and rightfully so, for his amazing punditry skills, but yesterday he said? That they're really difficult, and it wasn't really
it's
difficult.
Like 2-0 being a dangerous scoreline.
I mean, Joe Hart is a good keeper, but he's getting increasingly prone to clangers, either in an England or Manchester City shirt. And yesterday was entirely his fault. I don't know why the pundits are so anxious to big him up. Or is it? Do you think because he's English? Or?
It is because he's English, because he's a very nice guy, and because he talks. It's that problem. I mean, you talk to the press a lot. They do. I mean, you know, Harry Redknapp. You know, you do tend to see people become quite favourably disposed towards people. I mean, Gary Neville was very hard on David De Gea when he Matter's free kick. He was very specific about what he'd done with his feet, and he really, you know, very quite technical stuff about goalkeeping. But yeah, he seems to like Joe Hart.
Well, no, but I'm not saying... Joe Hart seems to be a real nice guy, and, you know, just because he let in a soft one doesn't make him a terrible person or anything, but, yeah, just call him on it, you know. I'm sure Joe Hart is invariably the first to put his hand up when he makes a mistake, so...
Right.
He may not be as quick to do it in the future now, because he knows he's going to get such an easy ride.
No, but there is a... It is... We deal in narratives, do we not? And the narrative, the story we're telling with Joe Hart is that he is the rising young keeper that England have been waiting for, so it's a bit confusing when other things happen. Well, there you go. Football Weekly, not afraid to tell it like it is, not afraid to tear up our narrative, not afraid to say, for example, this Roberto Mancini fella, he's not some foreign chancer, he knows what he's doing.
In the Premier League.
In the Premier League, Greg. Well, yeah. It's that old chestnut, isn't it?
Well, possibly. I mean, yesterday it didn't seem to be going his way, and he changed things to, you know, he put his three in at the back, and he brought Edin Dzeko on, and
he brought Mike on as well to take on Gareth Bale.
Yeah, after Mike must have had nightmares about that time at Inter. Was Mike on did get torn asunder, didn't he, by him? And he made a hell of a difference, and I think he's I think he might just show a chart. So we were talking about this yesterday. Maybe he just shows he was showing a chart to Edin Dzeko before he came on. You know, this thing that you don't like being packed with instructions before you go on. But we reckon his chart is just an arrow pointing towards the goal. And Edin Dzeko just nods his head and goes, yes, boss, and then goes on and scores the winner.
Right. Dzeko, before the game, said, you can call me whatever you want, but I will never accept that I'm a super sub. Here's his stats. As a starter, 0.43 goals a game. As a sub, 2.19. goals per game. Barry, you can't argue with numbers like that.
Well, maybe what they should do is just start the game and then after about 30 seconds bring him on.
Ooh.
So he'd still be a sub, but he'd play 89 minutes.
Right. Management's Barry Glendening. Silva's ball through, that was big as well. That's another reason for Man City looking a bit more sorted than they were before. No, David Silva returning to the fold?
Yeah, he was very good. Yeah, and yeah, he pulled the strings like he had done in previous games before he was out of the team. And Aguero as well. I mean, his finish was so cool. And he cut inside and didn't lose his head and just placed it into the bottom corner.
Lovely stuff, lovely stuff. As for Spurs, disappointment for them, but perhaps better things on the horizon, because next weekend they are facing Arsenal.
Yeah, I think a lot of Spurs, or a lot of how they perform, very much depends on Lennon and Bale, and they didn't fire yesterday at all. Lennon was rubbish. Bale was poor by his own high standards. And then, like, speaking of media narratives, another one seems to be that Andre Villas-Boas is this imbecile who, you know, bumbles around from one catastrophe to the next in a collapsible car wearing clown shoes. I think it's pretty unfair that the game yesterday could probably have gone either way if his players had performed a bit better.
Barney, tell us a... Ooh.
Sorry.
Can of fizzy pop ahoy. Go on, open it up.
Are you sure?
Spread the love. Oof. Ooh. That's like in the adverts, isn't it?
Well, I'm not going to drink it now because there'll be audible glugging noises and there'll be complaints.
Yeah, absolutely. Having teased us with that, Barney, tell us all about your Saturday.
I went to Birmingham for Villa, Man United.
And you're still riding high on the enthusiasm.
It was really good. It was a great game. Brilliant afternoon. And it was one of those ones where a team comes back from 2-0 down and, you know, normally there's curses in the press box and people hurling their laptops over their shoulders. But I think everybody sort of knew. So it wasn't really a rewrite as much as a write.
That's so interesting. So basically, when Villa went 2-0 up, everyone just started writing, how did Man United come back into this game?
Well, the first goal came within about 4 minutes.
Yeah.
But the first half, Villa were great. They were really good. They had Stephen Ireland playing in the position I like, the kind of a defensive attacker. He was just, he was there to sort of hack at Paul Scholes whenever he got the ball. And he was doing it really well. And Scholes and Carrick's quite a passive midfield, and they were really disrupted. And Villa deserved to lead. But actually, the ref warned Ireland to stop doing it and said that he would book him if he sort of kicked Scholes again. He wasn't really kicking him, he was sort of nibbling at him, which I thought was a bit over the top. And after that, you know, the game changed.
Is that what that was the difference, was it?
Well, I thought it made a big difference. Ireland definitely didn't close down as quickly. And obviously, Hernandez came on and they changed
for
the formation.
Ashley Young.
They're playing a sort of 4-2-4 thing. And it was Scholes' pass over the top that put Hernandez in for the first goal, which he had a moment to pick out. And after that, it was all different. There was one particularly nice... I mean, Wayne Rooney did nothing at all, but for the second goal, he played a lovely pass inside the Irish fullback, Ender Stevens, who was very good on his first start.
Right, here's some Hernandez numbers. As a starter, 0.6 goals per game. As a sub, 1.46.
What Manchester United should do is start the game and then after about 30 seconds just bring him on as a sub. And then you see he'd still be a sub,
it's
but would
brilliantly
play
simple and simply brilliant. Nice one. Although Sir Alex was saying, "Oh, he's picked himself," i.e., that he will be starting the next game. It's a shame for Villa and for Wyman, who got the fantastic brace. Pride, but no points. Or Barney, should the narrative here be, Leo, you were 2 goals up, you threw it away, you laughing clown people.
Well, that might be a bit unkind.
Well, when you're 2-0 up, you've got a fair margin for error.
They did drop off. They were really pressing and they were 2-0 up. They did drop off a bit. But United were very good after that and it was a change of format. I don't really buy that you've got to play Hernandez just because he scores when he comes on as a sub from the start. I mean, it really changed the game and Villa couldn't react. It was the change that was the problem.
Are Villa going to be in the Premier League next year?
Yeah, of course they were. They've got a very good manager.
All right. And
you know, that's the 8th time this season that United have come back from losing position to win.
I do know that.
That's a lot of times.
17 games, 10 times they've gone behind, 8 times they've come back.
I think between United and Chelsea as well, or in the top, there's 20 matches been turnarounds from the teams being behind, which suggests that it's going to be a very exciting Premier League running if they're all kind of scoring 2 goals and conceding 3.
I have to say, it's been pretty exciting so far. I mean, we're quick to slam matches and title races, etc., when they're a bit of a dull, plodding procession, but this has been a bit of a blinder so far, hasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Good. Arsenal-Fulham. Arsenal certainly cranking the entertainment up to 11 with this game against Fulham. The Arsenal worst start since Ometa is now on 1982.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's a long time, isn't it?
And they finished 12th that year.
Did they?
Yeah, I believe so.
All right. Well, good knowledge, Barney. This is another team that is finding a 2-goal lead, a 2-0, the most dangerous scoreline of all.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, people are very angry at Arsenal about all this. I don't know. I imagine
you don't feel their anger, do you, Barney? You were saying the other day about what do you want? You're in.
I'm not an Arsenal fan, so I don't feel it in the same way. But, and I can understand people feel these things a bit more strongly. But I think it's a really well-run club, and they're rebuilding a team. They have their best players nicked regularly
because they choose to sell them.
Well, if players want to go and there's a large offer, you don't really have any choice. I mean, that's why it's a well-run club. You could keep unhappy players or you know, not cash in. I mean, look at Van Persie. They signed him for, I don't know the exact figure, but they got extremely good value.
No, they did. It depends how you define the running of a club as being good or not, whether it's entirely in terms of the balance book. But clubs are usually seen as something beyond just being a business, and therefore the fact is they're not having success. I'm just wondering because, you know, there are obviously issues in the defence and the lack of cover at the back and all that.
Arsenal haven't won the league since billionaires came into English football.
Yeah.
That's what's happened.
Mm.
That's the difference.
All right.
You know, Man United have continued winning it because, you know, they've got incredible momentum, they've got incredible income. They don't have a billionaire funding them. Yes, there is a bit of a transfer fund, but to say we're absolute failures because we can't compete with the endless petro wealth and
right, well, they're currently
wealth.
Behind the billionaires of West Brom, Everton, West Ham and Spurs at the moment, Arsenal.
Well, if they finish there at the end of the season, I think that would be a really, really bad season. But I don't think that will happen.
Right,
I think they'll be in the Champions League next year.
That's a fair point. Looking at the way Arsenal are performing, though, and I do entirely take your point on board, but just looking at the kind of body language of the Arsenal players, do you think that maybe there's a bit of an issue with complacency, with a lack of drive? And when your manager comes out and says things like, well, we haven't won a trophy, et cetera, but we've finished fourth, which is like a title, it basically just says, you know, fourth best is kind of enough for us. That's fine.
Are you reading the body language here? I mean, for a start,
yeah.
I don't think there's such a thing as body language.
Oh, there certainly is.
No, there isn't. Certainly not among...
It's a science, Barney.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so the body language says that. I mean, I'm not really sure. I mean, they run around a lot. They
not quite enough. Just not
enough
quite
running
enough.
Around.
Does that suggest then that there's pressure on Wenger if he thinks that finishing fourth is all he's got to do? Like,
I don't think there is pressure on him.
No, but there's pressure above to just get into the top four because of the money that generates.
Yeah.
Therefore, we'll say you can have that to spend next season. Therefore, it's another 20
million. I
think
that's the thing. There's no pressure to actually go out and do anything beyond getting to the four, which they can do, as you say,
Barney,
quite comfortably.
Trickling down into the body language. And the body,
exactly.
It's the body language of someone who wants to be in the top four.
See, if he was to say, run through a brick wall for me, I don't think they would. Because I think he's more likely to say, maybe may not walk through the brick wall, but if you just get up to it and graze a little bit, that's fine by me. And that's the problem. So, anyway, good. Why didn't you buy Berbatov, he was asked afterwards, which is, yeah, fair enough, Berbatov played well, and yeah, a lot of players you could have bought. But the surprise was, he said, we didn't know he was on the market. Everyone knew Berbatov
was on the market.
Yeah.
Could have done a nice little deal there with Van Persie, couldn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. He was flying around Europe. Mm. He could have stayed at home.
I don't think you have to buy every player who has a good game against you. I mean, you know, that's not really the way to manage, is it?
That's true.
Well, he'd be buying Chris Bird and who else was in with it? Steve Sidwell, if that was the case, because they play very well for Fulham.
But Sidwell used to play for Arsenal, didn't he?
When he was a youth player, wasn't he, before he went to Reading?
There you go, Barry. Mm. All right, West Ham are in sixth place, Barry. Above Spurs and Arsenal, Kevin Nolan. But he's not celebrating.
Yeah.
That's terrific, isn't it? I love the Respect Players show when they go to their old clubs.
Really?
And because football's a serious business, they don't inflict any further misery on the fans they used to call their own supporters by not doing chicken runs, by not making little heart shapes with their fingers. I think it shows great sensitivity.
Are you being sarcastic?
I might be. I love goal celebrations.
The non-celebration celebration is just ridiculous anyway.
Yeah.
At this stage. I mean, Kevin Nolan's goal celebrations is one of the more risible in Premier League football anyway, so I'm glad he didn't do it. But yeah, if he loved Newcastle fans that much, why didn't he bloody stay there?
Yeah. Is it not a bit egotistical as well? I think,
or else don't score against.
Me doing my little celebration is going to break the hearts of these people. I'll spare them that. Anyway, all right. And also up in the above Arsenal category, in fourth place are Everton. But hey, Sunderland, what happened there?
They scored, creating
chances, scoring goals.
Well, they scored one goal.
Right. Well, there.
Yeah, they were quite unlucky.
Who scored for them?
Johnson.
Adam Johnson?
Yes.
Not Stephen Fletcher?
No, Stephen Fletcher nearly scored, but he fizzed a sort of diagonal one, just inches the wrong side of the upright.
Right.
Sunderland were quite unlucky, but then the winner, they or the losing goal they conceded was rather embarrassing. A sort of Fellaini nutmeg through somebody's legs, and yeah.
Right. On the subject of Fellaini,
yes. This is page one of the current reporting on Everton handbook.
Yeah, you've got to talk
Fellaini
about Fellaini
future.
Yeah. Well, no, just David Moyes got rid of Cahill in the summer, and a lot of Everton fans were, you know, disappointed to see him go. But he got rid of him to move Fellaini into his position, and Cahill was good in that position, but Fellaini is so much better, and he's a better footballer, and I think Everton have played much better this season because he's in that position. And he basically, yeah, you know, if he flicks the ball on, Jelovic scores a goal. That just tends to happen these days.
Did you see the piece on Fellaini and his chest work?
Oh,
I think it was on Goals on Sunday on Sky. He's the best with his chest that David Moyes has ever seen. And every time the ball comes up, they had a montage. He basically somehow catches it between his chest
his
muscles,
right.
Yeah, and he can pass with his chest. Right. And it's not so much flicking on.
He's good with balls on chest. I'm not going to be the one to make a teabagging joke.
I don't think he can actually head the ball with that hair he's got, you see.
He relies on the chest.
I
wonder if
his
chest hair is probably like that. It probably causes an acrylic, a Velcro effect.
That's why he can cushion it down so well.
Yeah, he's certainly amazing.
I'm so glad we found a fresh angle on Fellaini, because what I had written down here is, will they be able to keep him past January? And David Moyes is hoping that Fellaini's own ambition to get Everton into the Champions League is going to be enough to see him withstand all the tempting offers that are going to come his way.
But that's a heartwarmingly naive outlook. But I don't really think David Moyes... I'd say that's more a plea than anything else. David Moyes did come out and say, look, if he goes, he goes. We've, you know, lost better men than him, and we'll manage... Everton are bigger than any one player, and that's all he can do, really. If Fellaini gets a big money offer from Chelsea, but it seems to be Chelsea who are being linked with him constantly, then I'm sure he'll go. Why wouldn't he?
Well, because he might want to stick around and get his team into the Champions League and then go. I don't know. You might be right.
And also, Chelsea have got three players in his position at the moment as well. So,
and they play in a different way, do they not? Maybe you can't mention Fellaini.
Well, there's always room for the chest.
I think what
a different option.
Buy a plan.
What David Moyes should do is play him in a more withdrawn role, because that's when he does that, Fellaini tends not to play very well. But then that might, and people might lose interest in buying him.
Right. Okay.
But then Everton's Champions League dream and Marouane Fellaini's Champions League dream would die.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Really.
Exactly.
All right then. Wigan and West Brom. Well, that's West Brom in fifth place still. Extraordinary stuff. Extraordinary. And Southampton still
This is. I was discussing this with someone over the weekend. Everyone is going on and on about how great Everton are. Everton are wonderful. Everton are brilliant. West Brom doing just as well, and everyone just glosses over them.
Right? It's not that surprising as well. They do have some good players and a good manager. I mean,
surprising that Steve Clarke's done so well. After being at Liverpool as an assistant manager and seen to be maybe a failure, because Dalglish was seen to fail there as well. So it was quite surprising that West Brom had done.
He was very good at Chelsea. Well.
As a coach, but nobody thought he could step up. Maybe
if they're
into
still
a manager
there at the
well
end of the season, I'd be surprised. But we often see teams, don't we?
No. Well, we do. But Barry, by all means, take this opportunity not to gloss over West Brom and to.
No, I just wanted to point out that you were about to gloss over West Brom. I have nothing to say either. They're just going quietly about their business in a very efficient manner. Without having any particularly big name star players. Sorry, Barney, am I boring you?
That's the thing. They've just got no box office.
I'm looking at the
box office. As soon as I start talking about West Brom, Barney's reading a report about a rugby match. Yeah.
No, it's not rugby. I'm looking at the West Brom team sheet.
Okay.
Perhaps it's because of Everton's have been, you know, everybody knows who their players are.
Exactly.
Over the years,
and the narrative.
West Brom have just.
We need a West
Steve
Brom
Clark.
Media
we need,
narrative.
Yeah, we do need a narrative, yeah.
All right.
Patronising.
Maybe we'll get one next weekend where they are up against Chelsea.
I thought Frank Skinner was coming on the podcast, no?
I'm sorry. Speechless. Speechless, Greg. Now, also coming up next weekend. Not that we haven't got enough to talk about from this weekend, but also coming up next weekend is Southampton's game. At QPR, yes, the derby of the windless wonders. Both teams failed
derby
to get
of the damned.
Well, quite possibly, because a lot of people are pointing this and saying, "Is this going to be, you know, the game where one of the managers is relieved of his duties?"
You'd like it to be Mark Hughes, wouldn't you?
Well, I said before, I don't want to wish him ill, but he is certainly the drabbest aspect of this Premier League for me.
He's
Mark
very
Hughes.
Surly, isn't he? He doesn't make an effort. He's very gloomy. And
he is gloomy.
Yeah.
And he ignores his players by all accounts. And keeps
does
himself,
he?
He keeps himself very separate from the players. And
well, you know, having said that, I saw them train last season when they were in the... I was there to talk to someone or other, and I watched them train, and they did actually look... I was surprised by Mark Hughes. They looked very close. He was much more animated with the players training. He sort of, he came to life. He bloomed before
my eyes.
Yeah, yeah, and I was surprised, actually. Now you mention it. He looked totally different to the man we see
in
front
now.
Of all the adverts with someone asking him questions. And he I could see there was a sort of... The players like him.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I've spoken to players who had him before at, say, Blackburn. They all seem quite loyal to him.
Yeah, no, he looked a different man. He obviously comes to life when he's in a tracksuit.
All right then, Mark Hughes. Nigel Adkins, everyone loves him. But that's going to be a huge game. Southampton, of course, failed to beat Swansea. And QPR, well, they lost at Stoke, didn't they? Here's an interesting set of stats from Infostrada. For the third time in their last four Premier League matches, QPR starting lineup consisted of 11 different nationalities. OK, here's the other stat. QPR, the first Premier League club since Watford in 2006-07 to fail to win in their first 10 Premier League matches of the season. Is there a connection between those two things? Or am I just being reductive?
A big xenophobe.
No, it's not. I'm not saying that foreigners are bad.
Well,
I'm just saying
that
11 different nationalities
communication
might...
breakdowns?
It's a cohesion.
And...
It's a unity of spirit and purpose.
Well, we see this with the England team, don't we? Because they're all the same. And, you know, look at them.
Yeah, good answer, Bernie. Top stuff. Right, what are we going to talk about next? Gary Neville's hotel? Is it? Gary Neville's hotel? Gary's just been given permission to build a big hotel next to Old Trafford. On top of Lou Macari's fish and chip shop, I'm thinking. Is that right? Phil, I'm hoping, is going to do the interiors. Brother
is it,
Phil.
Is it a sort of ecologically sound venture? Because he's very into green issues.
Yeah, he's got this underground house that he's building.
Yeah, so I believe.
It's like a hobbit's home or something. It's not going to be like that, is it? Behind
all what, the hotel? No, the hotel's quite a standard thing. Well, according to the designs. It's interesting, though, isn't it?
I don't want to mock Gary Neville for that, by the way. I think it's really great. There's
what, the ecological home?
Yeah, no, it's great that he's sort of publicised... tweets about it and stuff. I mean,
he's
the only person left in the world who's interested in green issues is Gary Neville.
That it's come
George
to this.
George Mumby up.
And him too, but you know, pay more attention.
Is he just bored? Is that why he's doing it? He wants to interest. I mean, he's doing a lot on the telly as well, isn't he?
He is doing a lot on the telly. And he has a sideline, controversially, if you ask Carlos Tevez, in being an England assistant manager. Carlos Tevez saying, which leading nation would have a TV pundit as their assistant manager? None, he said. Why has Carlos Tevez got a column in The Sun? Did you know he had a column in The Sun?
I didn't. Presumably they got rid of Harry Redknapp or something?
I don't know.
There's a bit of a history between Neville and Tevez, I think. I don't think they're...
Gary Neville once get in trouble for giving Tevez the bird?
Yep. I think you're right.
It's personally motivated, you know, he's getting his own...
Well, that's wrong that he should use the column of his...
Imagine that happening in a newspaper.
Have someone using a column to score points.
It's astonishing, isn't it?
I kind of miss, you know, footballers. The, you know, in the past, the kind of other interests used to be just running a pub or, you know, doing other things.
Or going bankrupt with a club.
Or betting or, you know, that kind of sideline is always very interesting. And, when there used to be, like, plumbers. Like, Tom Finney was he was a plumber as well as a footballer, and he had a plumbing business. I once saw him in his plumbing van. Going down a Lancashire street, and it was, you know, that, you wouldn't see that these days.
No.
Going to, you know, I don't know.
Rio Ferdinand, he's not a plumber, is he? He's a magazine publisher, film producer.
Exactly. It was Tom Finney.
Like range of shoes.
Shoes,
He wouldn't wrestle junk out of a back flush, would he?
No, he wouldn't.
No. Tom Finney would, you know, the kind of man he was.
Yeah.
Brett Angel, when he retired, he, despite having his UEFA A licence, ended up stacking shelves in Tesco in Southport for $6.50 an hour.
My word.
And now he's coaching in New Zealand. And Michael,
crazy world it is.
Michael Branch had a sideline in pharmacy.
Really? Yeah.
Yes. That was brought to a rather abrupt end last Friday.
Oh.
He's got 7 years in the big house for drug dealing.
Oh dear. The wrong kind of pharmacy. Yeah. Oh dear.
Greg's his buddy. Greg met him out in a nightclub. He used to hang around.
Well,
is that right?
Someone I used to play football with was out and you know, holding court around the table. And
Branchy was there.
And Branchy was on the table.
Was he giving it large?
This lad was, oh, come over here, come and meet Branchy. You know,
so what was the nightclub called?
It was in Concert Square in Liverpool, just right. This, but you know, back in the day, very salubrious place. I think it was outside the. It was called the Mojo. I think it wasn't. Mojo. It was a bar. Yeah, it was a bar, and that was like that was the better. That was the better bar. Hang on, Mojo might have been Modo actually. It's a long time ago. This is like 13 years ago.
Oh, was it that long?
Yeah, and they all had the trackies on, and they were all like, oh, we're gonna go and get our going out gear on now. We'll see you later. You know, I didn't see them later, but that's that's what you used to do back then.
How long did you wait?
About 5 minutes, and
right,
then,
okay.
And then my mates came, thankfully.
I must admit, rather than, you know, footballers going on to funny professions and stuff, I like the ones who come from funny professions. They're that much rarer, aren't they? Because, you know, usually footballers, all they ever did was football. But you get the odd one who, George Weah, trained as a, I think it was a telephone repairman. Fantastic. And most of my examples are going to be Serie A, but Torricelli, who used to be a carpenter. And made it all the way to the World Cup squad for Italy. Fantastic. Yeah.
But you never used to be a carpenter. You're always a carpenter.
I suppose you are, actually.
Stuart Pearce is still an electrician.
Hmm? Yeah. There you go.
Actually, it's probably not. It's probably a new regulation. You wouldn't want him changing any major wiring in your house.
Well, I definitely want to see his little card.
Apparently,
make sure.
Apparently, Stuart Downing used to be a footballer before.
Badum-tish. All right. In other news, Celtic, fresh from the heroics over Barcelona, drew 1-1 at home to St Johnstone. They're now second in the SPL behind Hibs.
Is this where we're meant to make a joke about Hibs thrashing Barcelona?
Yeah. Can you imagine what the score would be?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Did you see the appeal Hearts put out to their fans last week? It was basically like just rattling a begging bowl under their nose.
Yeah. That's not going to work, rattling a begging bowl at football fans.
Panhandling, we need X amount of cash quickly. Or
but that's what Sid Lowe's been doing with his Real Oviedo.
Yeah, did you see there was a big march in Oviedo yesterday?
Oh, was there?
Yeah, through the streets. Oh. It was one of those protests I'm so fond of. But it seemed to be a lot of people on it.
Marching from a tapas bar they were going to anyway, to a football stadium they were going to anyway.
Yeah. Del Piero's Sydney FC were 2-0 up and lost 3-2. It really is the most dangerous scoreline.
Very dangerous lead.
And his manager resigned after. There you go. He said, not knowing manager's name. Zola's, little Gianfranco Zola's little Watford had a very, very big 6-1 victory over Leeds in the Championship, Barney.
Amazing.
That was extraordinary, wasn't it? Nobody saw that one coming, did they?
Didn't see it coming, didn't see it happen.
Didn't see it happen.
First I've heard of it.
All right. Well, speaking of Italian 6-1s, because of course, Serie A this weekend, Juve, who just seen their incredible unbeaten streak brought to an end by Inter, took on Pescara. And Pescara were very much the wrong team in the wrong place. They got hammered 6-1. 6-1. And that means Juve have now scored 10 goals in the last two games because they beat, Nordjylland, of course, 4-0 at the weekend. And this was really exciting if you, like me, are a fan of Fabio Quagliarella, because after spending ages out with his busted knee and fighting to get a starting role, he was in the starting lineup for this one. He responded with 3 goals and set up another 2. And it was classic Quagliarella stuff. I'm looking at you, Greg, because everybody else is staring off into the middle distance.
Yeah, I'm trying to...
Quagliarella... There is no player, for me, typifies the kind of Panini sticker overhead kick excellence more than him. And he unleashed a couple of classics in this game.
What about Milan?
Well, what about them?
They lost again.
They did, didn't they? They lost again 3-1. Actually, you know what? If we say again, I think they'd had a 4-game unbeaten streak in all competitions, but Fiorentina came to town, and we were hinting at the fact that we like Fiorentina in the last pod. Fiorentina beat them 3-1. The opening goal was from former Milan player, former Liverpool player, Alberto Aquilani, who, guess what, didn't celebrate against his former club.
Did he get injured afterwards?
No, he didn't actually.
More amazing.
In non-breaking news, he didn't. Get injured, but Milan didn't get back into the game. Apparently, Allegri, his half-time talk, he was so angry, you could hear him screaming at the players from out on the pitch. But it didn't make any difference. They lost 3-1 at home, and there was all sorts of talk overnight that this was going to be it. He'd be gone, but Berlusconi, he was flying back from somewhere like Thailand or Bangkok or something, where he had urgent political business. He's going to stay another week, so that's terrific. And all sorts of other drama in Italy. You had Napoli, who Fiorentina are chasing for third spot. They were 2-1 down with 15 minutes to go away to Genoa. They ended up winning 4-2 terrific stuff. Inter lost, so it's still 4 points the gap at the top of the table. They lost away at Atalanta. And the other big news was, of course, the Rome derby. Don't know if you saw this, anyone? It was available on popular English TV channel ESPN UK. No? Nobody catches? No? It was a great game. 5 goals, 2 red cards. Daniele De Rossi smacking, and I mean properly smacking, like proper uppercut to an opponent in the face and getting sent off when his team were 2-1 down. And he'll be out for a while now. He's been dropped from Italy's squad for the game against France midweek.
But dropped because of that?
Yeah, because Prandelli has an ethical policy whereby if you are, you know, if you're shown a red card, then you shouldn't be then called up to represent your nation.
Really?
That's been Italy's policy actually for a while, but Prandelli's very strong on it.
Is De Rossi, is he going to come and play in England now?
Well, it's interesting because over the summer there were a lot of offers for De Rossi.
City are after him, aren't they?
Yeah. And he said, no, I'm going to stay here, because he's very much in the Totti mould, born and bred Roman, going to stay with my team. And then the club said, yeah, we're going to keep him. And then Zeman, the manager, basically dropped him for a couple of games, and which immediately brought the story back to the forefront of things. If he's not in Zeman's plans, are the club going to keep him? And Prade, the general manager, has been saying, we will listen to offers, which isn't the same as we're going to sell him, but he isn't saying there's no way we're going to sell him. The fact that he picked up this ban in such ridiculous circumstances, you know, he's one of the big leaders of this team. They're 2-1 down against Lazio in the biggest game, well, one of the biggest games of the year. And he basically smacks an opponent in full view of everybody in the face.
Why did he do it?
Well, because he just lost his temper. I mean, the guy was pulling on his shirt and there was a bit of toing and throwing, but he just turns around and clocks him in the face. For De Rossi, it's not something that's particularly new. I mean, we all remember McBride in the 2006 World Cup, but I think he's received something like 6 or 7 straight reds in his career. He does have a bit of a history of this kind of thing. The narrative with him was that he had calmed down with the added responsibility at Roma, but apparently not. He'll be out for 3 games, and you wonder how this will impact on his future or otherwise at Roma. Anyway, there
We're just destroying narratives all over the place.
Yeah, I know. It's shocking, isn't it? Anyway, there you go. Roma, they managed to lose 3-2. They did pull it back to 3-2 at the end with a lovely a free kick drifted in from Milan Pjanic, who turned around and swore at Zeman on the bench. Zeman turned to the chap sitting next to him and said, is that for me? And the guy said, yes, it is. And Zeman smiled wryly in his Zeman fashion. He's so cool. I got your notes, Greg. These are your notes.
Oh, right, okay. Thanks.
I saw Tom Finney in his plumbing van. That's you.
Yeah, I remembered that. Yeah. Looks good, that, isn't it?
Are you sure it was Tom Finney? It could have just been another old man.
Well, who Tom Finney employed.
But did it have Tom Finney? Right.
Yeah, no, it has Tom Finney's plumbing like on the side of it.
Right, but he's probably back in the office, isn't he?
Well, it's construction, is it?
Yeah.
He employing
old men. I don't think he made much money out of football. Yeah.
When I used to get the bus to school every day, John Fashanu used to drive past in a car with John Fashanu, who drives a Lotus on it.
Oh, yeah.
And he used to stop at the traffic lights right next to the bus stop.
It a Lotus?
No, it was a strange thing. It was a Vauxhall Astra. No, it was a Lotus.
Oh, right. Okay.
But we always used to wave at him. We took to waving at him as though we were massive fans.
Right.
And he would just look straight ahead. This happens to me all the time.
All right. As ever, listeners, the best chat happening while you are listening to the musical Sting. We were just reprising that Tom Finney plumbing story, and Barney pops up with that. Terrific stuff, Barney. Who have you ever seen driving by?
Driving by?
I saw Attilio Lombardo on a moped. because he was famous for taking his moped to and from games. And you see players who sometimes walk back from the game, don't you?
Yeah, I saw Jari Litmanen on a running machine in a gym.
Huh.
Yeah, because he wasn't doing much running for Liverpool under Hulley at the time.
I saw Luis Boamorte practising in the park on his own with a football.
Who he was?
Boamorte.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just practising doing keep-ups and running up and down.
Oh,
I'm very impressed.
My best one, Keith Gillespie once watched... there was a game I was playing in Liverpool. Stewards were playing. Scouse listeners will know Dovedale Towers is a pub in Liverpool, and there's a pitch behind there. And Keith Gillespie was absolutely rotten watching us play football, just drinking at the side. He was probably the only spectator. And somebody said, "Oh, his girlfriend lives nearby here or something." So instead of seeing to his girlfriend, he decided to come down and watch probably one of the worst football matches he's ever seen and just get...
Instead of seeing to his girlfriend?
No, seeing his girlfriend.
You said seeing too.
Did I?
You can take the boy out of the football team, but you can't take the football team out of the boy.
What the hell was he doing watching a football match and not seeing to his girlfriend?
I meant seeing his girlfriend. Oh, yeah, just a... Freudian slip there. Anyway, yeah, so he was just stood there drinking Bacardi Breezes or something, watching
maybe
us.
Maybe this was his idea of foreplay.
Yeah. I can't remember what the score was. Yeah.
Right.
Not anything else.
Now, excitingly, midweek, they've got some international friendlies sorted. That was nice of them, a bit of a free midweek, and they've gone and put together some friendly matches.
England are playing the inaugural game at the Friends Stadium in Stockholm.
Oh, that's nice. They called it the Friends Stadium.
Yeah, it's called the Friends Union or something. It's got Friends in it anyway.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and Sweden are really up for it, and they've picked their best team.
Have they?
Yep, and they want to win.
Good.
The Republic of Ireland are playing Greece.
We haven't talked about Wilfried Zaha getting his...
Yeah. Well, he's a very confident young man, very talented. He could play for Ivory Coast, and there is still a chance that he's vaguely undecided about it. There are three players in this England squad who've dual nationality.
Right.
And have had to.
But if they play in this friendly, what happens then?
It's got to be a competitive game. So Jenkinson, we could have Jenkinson, Sterling and Zaha on the field.
Yeah.
Who then decided not to play for England again.
Right.
And wasn't Hodgson quite surprised that he was a bit... Didn't he seem a bit naive about this and say, well, I can't understand why anybody wouldn't want to play for England?
No, he wasn't surprised, but I think he's had conversations about it with Sterling before, and I think he wants the decision. I mean, Sterling is... I think he's a really good player, and I think, you know... But certainly, he lived in Jamaica until he was six.
Sterling.
Both his parents are Jamaican. It's not as though he's saying, I want to play for Jamaica for the big bucks.
But can you not argue that, say, Zaha decided to play for Ivory Coast instead of England, that maybe that would make sense because...
He's got more chance of getting to a World Cup.
Well, from a footballing point of view, maybe as well, but just from the point of view of like not having this intense media glare all the time when you're playing in England and everybody... You know, it can kind of ruin a player, the pressure that brings, whereas if he was going out and...
Being involved in Africa Cup of Nations is a bit of a blow on your in terms of selling yourself to clubs.
Yeah. I just mean in terms of, you know, taking yourself out of the kind of the whole cauldron that is the, you know...
I hear what you're saying, Greg.
On the other hand, he's 20. He plays for Crystal Palace and he's very confident. I don't think the glare and the spotlight will bother him. I think he'll make a decision on who he wants to play for.
All right. You were mentioning another game, sorry.
Yeah, the Republic of Ireland are playing Greece.
Right.
And... Luxembourg are entertaining Scotland.
That's true, they are.
Two absolute classics.
Andorra, Iceland, Armenia, Lithuania. These are some of the fixtures coming your way. Saudi Arabia, Argentina. Where's that game going to be played then?
Doha, probably.
Monaco, probably. Yeah. I don't know. Austria, Ivory Coast. Those are very interesting games, aren't they? Panama, Spain. I think that one's been postponed, actually.
Italy, France.
Yeah, Italy, France, as you say. Yeah. Memories, eh?
Germany, Holland.
France was agog over pictures. Do you know they've erected a giant, and I mean giant, statue of the Materazzi Zidane headbutt incident outside the Stade de France?
It's not really how you'd want to be remembered.
It's an extraordinary statue to stick up, isn't it? Of all the things to do, you know, you want to celebrate the work of Zidane. You could have had him puking. You could have had so many things. And they went for him headbutting Marco Materazzi. Anyway, Marco Materazzi went to Paris and sat underneath it, giving it two thumbs up for a Twitter pic. And apparently French fans were outraged by this. What do they want, these French fans? Speaking of French fans, my Sunday, I had a busy time. After the that Rome Derby extravaganza, I had the very great pleasure of watching the big Sunday night clash in Ligue 1. I won't bore you with too many of the details, because to be honest, the level of play wasn't that great. The big question going into this was Paris Saint-Germain, Ibrahimovic got sent off previous week. Can they win games without him? Because they had all sorts of problems at the start of the season without him. So could they win games without him? And they went to Montpellier, who are, of course, the reigning French champions, but now are a bit rubs. And they had a man sent off 10 minutes in by this crazy referee. This referee is this young chap. He's 30. And all he does is produce cards all day long. He's produced, let me get this right, 8 red cards in 16 matches this season. That's a lot. Anyway, he handed out 2 in this game. Paris Saint-Germain went down to 10 men. They scored a goal. Brilliant. A really brilliant goal from Maxwell. Gorgeous goal. And then Montpellier got one at the end. And then they got man sent off themselves. But anyway, I mention all this because at the top of the French table, 6 teams within 2 points of each other. Paris Saint-Germain on top on goal difference alone ahead of Marseille. Marseille next weekend are at Bordeaux, who are another of these teams. They're in 6th place, but only 2 points off the lead. And you know what's special about this game, Greg?
No, I don't, but you're going to tell me.
I certainly am. Who's back from suspension for Marseille for this game?
I'm going to guess it's Joey Barton.
It certainly is, Greg.
He can score off direct corners.
He certainly can.
Yeah.
In other band's news, producer Ben has just chipped in. that Jan Mvila, who you all remember reading about in transfer rumours, Barry, you're always sticking him in your rumours.
He's off to Arsenal. No, Liverpool. No, City.
Anyway, he's the highly regarded midfielder, isn't it, from Rennes?
Yeah, he's a defensive midfielder.
There you go. Well, he's been banned for 2 years from the French national side for being... Well, producer Ben describes it as the leader of a nightclub gang, which... Like,
he sounds like he's in The Warriors, the film The Warriors.
Oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Oh. No, all in matching kind of denim jackets with cut-off sleeves. Mm. But no, it wasn't anything like that. More precisely, what happened was he basically led a group of five French players in between the last two qualifiers. They made a break for some local... night.
Well, have the other ones been banned or just him?
Well, he was the ringleader.
How can you be a ringleader?
With his bottles on his fingers going clink, clink, clink.
So he basically went out for a night out and asked some people, did he want to come out?
Exactly.
With him, and he got banned for 2 years.
I know.
And they said yes and didn't get banned.
Well, I think the thing is, if you're France, you have to crack down on this kind of thing. They've had all sorts of.
Being banned from the French national team is probably more a blessing than an inconvenience or an imposition.
What are you saying,
I think I could do without the grief.
Really?
Yeah.
You wouldn't if Ireland called you up. You'd
say, no, I'd play for Ireland. Yeah.
Why?
Just not France.
Well, that's because Ireland's your country and France isn't. That's why you don't care about playing for France.
I think Ireland's playing style would suit you more as well.
the French
style of play would be alien to you.
Mvila will be banned for the World Cup, apparently. Well, that's not in 2 years' time, is it? Is it 2 years already? Good Lord, time really has flown. Unbelievable, really. Time has flown in this podcast as well. That brings us to the end of today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back on Thursday, with a verdict on those international friendlies and a bit of Sid Lowe and a bit of Top Chums with Cristiano Ronaldo, Pedro Pinto. Of course, Cristiano Ronaldo picked up a nasty gash on the eye. He got an elbow in the face, didn't he? And that an intense game for Real Madrid this weekend, which they won, Barcelona won, etc. But anyway...
It's not the same when you tell us.
No, it isn't, is it? Mm. No, Sid will be back, no doubt, on Thursday probably, but he'll have to fight for time because not only will Pedro be in the house, but Raphael Honigstein will be here too. Yeah, I tell you what, that's stellar a sexy lineup. Sexy lineup. Mm. Could be our best-looking lineup ever. Present company accepted. I'm on it.
You're not happy with this lineup?
No, I'm saying present company accepted. Maybe that's one for listeners to debate over the... over the, in the next few days. Good. Thanks very much, Barry Glendening, Greg Bukowski, and Barney Roney, and producer Ben, and you, the listener. And see you on Thursday.
The Guardian Masterclasses are now accessible as video downloads and streams. For our podcast listeners, we have a special offer on the great science writer Tim Radford's Masterclass. Normally £3 to stream or £5 to download. We are offering 10% off, and all you have to do is use our podcast listeners' discount code, ScienceSave, all one word, and check out all our Guardian Masterclasses at guardian.co.uk.